This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
OK, we have time for questions. We've got the roving microphone as before. If I could just remind you, if you don't mind sort of standing up so we can all see you and see you from the remote areas as well. And in fact, I'm going to start with a question which has been sent in from a group of people who are watching up in the St Helens satellite. This is from Barry Chambers. And his question is, do you think that school leaders will be able to prioritise employability skills in the face of adapting to the new league table benchmark of the English back? That sounds like one perhaps for Peter, I think.
Yes, I could have stayed in Chester this morning and met with them face to face rather than come down today. The answer is no.
Okay, do you want to elaborate at all?
Sorry?
Do you want to elaborate at all?
I think common sense says that in view of all the other things, they're going to have enough to worry about. And secondly, the history over the last 10 years has shown that as long as there is a focus on GCSEs as the criteria for judging a school's value, then other things will be pushed to the side.
Because the government is also saying at the same time as that they do expect schools to publish details in future of where their school leavers go to. I mean, could that be could that work against this? And that could actually lead to more focus on employability.
Well, since they disappear into so many fragmented areas of further study because of the fragmentation of the post-16 system, I think most people looking at those statistics, if and when they emerge, will not be able to make head nor tail of them. Yeah. Particularly journalists, I suspect.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. I think the focus will end up being on the English back measure rather than all the other measures. Does anybody else want to come in on that, the concerns about league tables and effect on employability? No. Okay, we'll take other questions. Questions from in the room here or from elsewhere. Okay, gentleman right at the back, going just before the chap in the middle then. Split second difference, yeah.
Hi, it's Lee Davies, the Institute for Learning, professional body for teachers and trainers in further education. I'm going to try and perhaps quickly answer three questions that Peter asked, and then leave a longer question for consideration. Peter asked why we haven't got more Karens in schools. Well, Peter, it's because they work in further education. You also said that teachers must be familiar with the modern workplace. They are. They're working in further education. And you told us we need to recruit specialist teachers from the workplace. We do. They work in further education. So the big question, therefore, is if we've got this rich vein of highly adept, highly qualified teachers working in further education, and you said you would rather one of those, the average age of entry to FE is 38, you would rather one of those than someone who, in your words, were wet behind the ears, so a fresh young graduate. Can we really tackle skills for employability at 14 to 16 all the time we have regulations that exclude further education teachers and trainers from schools?
Okay, thank you, very well put. Let's go to Peter for that one then, I think.
Well, I think you've answered the question already. So I rest my case. In those rare cases when there's been cooperation between FE colleges and traditional schools, the impact has been quite dramatic, but it's the exception rather than the rule, and it shouldn't be.
Of course, diplomas were an area where actually pupils were able to move between colleges and schools, and again, that looks to be under threat. Okay, question right in the middle there, please. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Andrew Gaskell, and I work for Cascade, who produce career software, and we're part of Loughborough University. This one's for kind of Steve, and I suppose anyone else that's kind of willing to add anything to it. Just kind of like with schools being able to kind of choose how they deliver careers guidance, can you see careers guidance getting more embedded into the curriculum as a method of delivery, or do you think it will kind of stay the same way as it is? Or
okay, yeah, so Steve, more embedded into the curriculum. You said careers education looks like it's not going to be statutory in any way, thin down national curriculum.
Well, the government's view certainly is that increasingly it will become an extra curricular activity and a cross-curricular theme rather than perhaps being directly embedded. There was a move from the previous government to very much use personal tutors increasingly as the front line for initial career and information advice and guidance. At the last minute, that legislation was actually cut out of the last bill before the election. But I do believe the present government still sees tutors as having an important role, and I think there's a capacity building job there to get more teachers to have a basic awareness and understanding of how they can help individual pupils, particularly where they have a vertical tutorial system where it could support those young people for perhaps 5 or 7 years through the school. And in the same way that I mentioned about LMI having a duality of purpose, both professionals and young people, I do think there's got to be more work done, increasingly with this new world we're moving into, to have more online capacity for various professionals, particularly teachers and teaching assistants, to be able to go online and actually find out what they need as a professional, rather than only using the same information sources as their own pupils will sometimes. So I think there's a different switch of role there, rather than, because increasingly young people themselves are not going to get a lot of access, I would say, face-to-face to external experts anymore. One of my worries is that schools will, and again, there's good schools and bad schools, as we know. The good schools will always look after their needs of their pupils and will do a good job for them. There's a lot of schools, for various reasons, will struggle. They've relied very heavily on the external careers and connection services for many years now, for CPD, for information sources, for curriculum materials, for general networking, for liaison with employers and training providers. And I think many of them will possibly cobble together a programme with a bit of work experience, a bit of software, a bit of online stuff, a few employer speakers coming in, etc. And it almost go back, my worry is back to the dark ages of the 60s and 70s, if we're not careful. I'm not optimistic because the government's drive is for the curriculum to be very academically focused, and they do have a view that the history teacher and the English teacher will be able to tell them about what careers they can do if they do English and history. Well, I'm sorry, I don't see why they would be able to do that any more than a careers teacher probably will be able to tell them what they can do with English, to be quite honest. So I don't buy that one, and I do have big concerns that in many places we're going to start going backwards.
Could I just add back to that? One simple low-cost proposition within any school is to engage with key members from their local community. Most typical schools in most typical towns, whether it's sort of Chester where I've been living, there are enough quasi-retired local business people, local engineers, who have a little bit of time on their hands because of obvious reasons, who would only welcome the opportunity to be given some mentoring training, some support training, and then work with individual schools as their, if you like, their careers guidance liaison person between the school and local employers. For example, if every school appointed one governor with a specific task of generating employer relationships with the local community to provide careers guidance, part of the solution is being delivered free of charge. I mean, I don't like things that are free, they're never valued. But there was a very good mentoring program that the last government introduced called Backing Young Britain, which used personal volunteers as mentors to work with long-term 18 to 24-year-old unemployed. I was one of those mentors. It lasted 6 months and the programme was cancelled. But it had an impact, bringing people in as role models into schools who can act as careers guidance people. Maybe in particular sectors of careers guidance is still very, very useful.
Actually, picking up on that, I mean, presumably also useful about bringing in people who are currently employed. And I wanted to come back to Karen, your comment you made earlier. Someone else picked up on it, that you actually found there was sort of difficult to get into local schools. You know, what was the problem? What sort of barriers were you finding?
Well, I think, to begin with, of course, schools are under tremendous pressure, or have been under tremendous pressure, to get students to go to university. So the whole focus of the education system, from what I see, I might be wrong, is to get people to go and, you know, apply to university. So for me to come in and offer something very different, it could spoil things a little bit.
Yeah, that's extraordinary, yes. Mm.
Just picking up several of the points, two things strike me that we haven't touched on. The voice of young people and their ability to now contribute to this debate, and certainly a conference that I organised last year brought that home very strongly, because it's their talent that's going to get us out of the mess we're in. Secondly, the world we're going into is nothing like we've ever experienced before. Even the word career no longer has a relevant meaning. So given the pace of change and the new industries which are emerging over the last 10 years, whether it be Google, whatever else that we're looking at, the future's going to accelerate. And given that the government is no longer accepting responsibility for leading a strategy which engages education with employment, is there a business case that can be suggested that actually would lead to a step forward, a leapfrog, in thinking about IAG and the experiences that need to go with it? Because I keep coming back to the fact that it is young people preparing for a world of work of which no one knows, and the importance of a high-quality IAG programme that seems to be necessary if we're going to bridge the sort of gap you've talked about.
Okay, just pick up on the first one, the voice of young people, and just to bring in Sam, to what extent the voice of young people being allowed to contribute and shape work experience?
Well, every student that comes on work placement through the Inspire standard feeds back on their placement anonymously. So that then gets fed back into the employers to shape their work placements for the future. So each work placement's better than the last one. So it's really important that, and when we was developing the standard, we had teachers, employers, student placement advisors, also the students themselves saying, what do you want to get out of work experience? And it was always fun. You know, they always want to go and have fun whilst they're there.
A business case for IAG, anyone like to have a go at that?
With respect, I don't think it needs to be made. I think Lord Brown, in some of the more obscure parts, said how important good guidance was for people moving forward. We know the cost of one in four graduates dropping out in the first year is dramatic. So purely the business case for supporting people going to university is dramatic. The cost of people not being in work is the cost of not providing appropriate guidance to help them into the world of work in the first place. I'm quite simplistic about these things.
And on the pace of change, I'm actually going to come back to Jane, because I was really struck by what you were saying right at the beginning, that you're detecting a shift in recruitment policy to looking more to school leavers rather than grad, which is, you know, if that's really going on, that, I mean, that's absolutely fascinating, albeit rather alarming for those people who are going to be paying higher tuition fees. I mean, why is that big employers or is that across the board?
It's employers across the board. I mean, at this stage, we're definitely seeing it as a trend, and that is since 2008. It's people ringing up and saying, we used to recruit all graduates. We're interested in having a school leaver intake, and Rob Alder over here is leading our efforts in this. And it is about businesses looking long and hard at themselves and looking at their costs, their overheads, and saying, you know, can we deliver what we have to deliver more cost effectively. I mean, these are hard-headed business decisions. And I think equally for young people, it's the same argument. I'm very struck when I meet our young intake. Not all of our students are in the sort of 16 to 18 age group. Many of them are older. They're coming to us sort of as part of these new careers. Mm. But when you meet them, I mean, they are so much more focused, so much better informed than certainly I was at that age. And I'd like to go back to the earlier questioner who said, well, what are young people themselves doing? And the fact is, in a digital age, I think they're doing an awful lot for themselves. We've certainly seen by now having a Facebook presence that it provides a focus for people who want to know what a career in accounting is like, and they don't want to hear it from us as the professional body. They don't want to hear it from their parents. They want to hear it from their peers. And they are organising themselves very, very well to give the kind of insights. I think as Karen described, you've got your advocates going out and talking to the people coming up through the system. So I think we're going to see a greater democratisation of all of this information. It's quite scary, I think, when you're my age. But somehow, I think young people seem to have a way of navigating their way through all of this in a very effective way.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your answers. Thank you for your questions. That brings us to the end of this session. Can we just finish with a show of appreciation to all of our speakers this afternoon? Thank you.